Talk given Friday, 18th August, 1978. The vast majority of us mortals are creatures of feeling, essentially. And secondarily, of thought. Thought in us generally reflects the way our feelings have worked since we were born, as well as the conditioning we have gone through in our ordinary everyday life experience. But our feelings actually dominate our lives from beginning to end. And our feelings are almost always reactions to stimuli from outside, as well as inward stimuli, bodily partly, and as we grow older, in terms of the feelings which are conjured up by memory. And being creatures of feeling in that sense, we are very much at the mercy of circumstance. We react and regret afterwards, often and often. We are easily hurt. We can also be easily pleased. We are hurt usually because our vanity or our ego conceit, our opinion of ourselves, is diminished by the stimulus from outside, mostly through people's behavior, through what they say to us or do to us, and so forth. We are pleased if our vanity is pampered, if our ego is inflated by what comes to us. And inflation is a phenomenon which is not just peculiar to our day and age, but it has been universal where our own human lives are concerned through the ages. But for those who are seriously concerned, and they are extremely few, whatever they may consciously, officially declare about themselves, those who are seriously concerned with living the religious life, which means living the life which brings the individual to true human fulfillment, then we shall utilize every single experience of the feelings being hurt or being pleased to learn our lessons. Primarily, and perhaps the most important of all, to become properly awakened to what we actually are at the moment, as a matter of fact, and not as a fiction which we create about ourselves through our own self-conceptions. Now, whether one treads the path of yoga or treads any other path which is specifically a religious discipline, this learning what we actually are at the moment as a fact and not as a fiction is of primary importance. You may recall that during our last two meetings, we talked about the total involvement of our whole self with living the religious life. A total commitment, that was the word we used. Now, this total commitment becomes practically impossible as long as, in fact, it is impossible, as long as we are creatures of feeling and subject to being hurt or being pleased. But if we learn the truth about ourselves through observing these feelings carefully, we shall discover some things, maybe several things, apart from the self-knowledge we gain. We shall discover something of great importance in connection with human fruition and with the true meaning of the true meanings of our ethical and spiritual values. You see, all the fine words we use about loving kindness or compassion, beauty, truth, goodness, and so forth. All those fine words, and they are good words, are terribly limited because of our particular interpretation of what they mean. Do bear this in mind very carefully. The psyche is in the ambivalent state until one has realized true wholeness, true purification. And being in the ambivalent state, the opposites of every single quality are constantly present and active. All our so-called knowing and observing is in terms of conflicting opposites. Being in terms of conflicting opposites, we do not truly know the full meanings, the real meanings of the words we use to express our ethical and spiritual values. Because of these conflicting opposites in the psyche due to our ambivalence. We have fixed ideas in connection with these values. And all fixations are obstructions to true human living and human growth. All fixations of any sort. Our interpretations of every experience, therefore, is in dualistic terms or multiple terms. So there is confusion. That energy which we call mind, which is a transcendent universal energy, without any characteristics in itself, is obstructed from functioning freely through our psyche, because the confused, conflicting state of the psyche prevents the light of transcendence from shining through quite easily, quite simply. So now, as we gradually come to know ourselves, we will begin to awake to the pure, the whole or holy, or if you like to use the word, the transcendent meaning of the words we use with respect to our ethical and spiritual values. Now we must be careful here. Do not think that we shall know these meanings in the ordinary sense of the word knowing or knowledge. In the ordinary sense of the word knowing or knowledge, there is an unbridgeable duality. I, the subject, I who am aware of myself as a separate self-conscious being, have come to know the meaning of this, that, or the other, which is the ethical or spiritual value which I name. So you see, the duality never disappears, and the separation caused by that duality, right within the deeps of our own consciousness. When we awaken to that duality and are sufficiently watchful of the fact that that duality functions, then gradually you will find that the duality disappears in the deeps of consciousness. And when that duality disappears, you no longer possess the quality or virtue which is called love or truth or wisdom or whatever it is. But you are it without any interference from the brain in terms of the act of knowing. If you say that I love, that is not love. Through the ages, we have always lied to each other. I love you. There is an I-you relationship, which we mistakenly call love, which is in fact possessiveness, domination, expectancy, hope, desire, passion, and all the rest of it. That is not love. In the same way, if we say, I am truthful, the very affirmation I denies that truth. Because these values, ethical and or spiritual, in their wholeness, in their perfection, are infinite. You can't denominate the infinite and separate it from the rest. There is no rest. There is only the infinite, the immeasurable, the absolute, the transcendent. God, use any word you like. It is there. It is the fact which is the one and only supreme fact of all existence, of the one total reality. And it is that which is trying to come through each and every human individual whose body still remains an animal body with all the limitations that imposes upon us, but who has transcended all those limitations, and lo and behold, through him the miracle is manifest, that through the finite, the particular, the mortal, there is manifest the infinite, the immortal. So you see, we can never know it. And when that is actually the case, there is never any assertion in terms of I. The fact remains that the organism as such remains that particular organism. It looks quite different from any other organism. Its voice is different from any other organism, and so on and so on. The outward manifestation of the finite mortal organism, of course, is distinguishable, is separate from, to that extent only, that it is distinguishable, separate from all other organisms. But through that living organism, the human being, this does not apply to the rest of the animal kingdom, through that particular organism, the human being, is manifest that extraordinary miracle of totality, of transcendence, functioning freely. This is the real meaning of human fruition. Then the great values, ethical or spiritual or whatever you like to call them, are actually manifest through you. One may speak of the person through whom it manifests as a you. And through him or her, as the case may be, without his or her being aware of it in terms of brain knowledge, is aware in a transcendent sense through being that particular thing. He is love. He is wisdom embodied. Otherwise, statements like the supreme teachers were omniscient have no meaning whatever. Omniscient, all-knowing. But that condition of all-knowing is the condition of all-being. Now you see, don't think about this. Don't merely try to get a feeling of it. Because all these are ways of trying to know it in terms of brain knowledge, which is separative knowledge. It is the sinful type of knowledge. The word sin in its original meaning is whatsoever hurts or tries to break the unity of the universe. See? So don't think about it or try to feel anything about it. Just let it remain as a vibration, if you like to say so, as a vibration within the psyche. You and I don't know what the psyche is. You can't touch it, you can't taste it, you can't smell it, you can't put it into a test tube, you can't take a foot rule and measure it, you see, and so forth. We don't know what it is. But there are certain phenomena displayed by the living human being which we class generally as mental or psychical or psychological phenomena as such. It's a convenient word. But that particular kind of energy to which we give the name, psychological, psychical, spiritual, or whatever name we like to give, is a very real energy. There is no mistaking that. Now, when we begin to sort of live in this kind of atmosphere, I was going to say, but you know what I mean, atmosphere is a poor word here. When we live in this kind of atmosphere, not external to us merely, but actually we are that atmosphere ourselves, then you will notice some quite remarkable things happening. First and foremost, and perhaps this, as long as we talk in terms of words, may perhaps be denominated one of the most important, we shall experience the reality of compassion. Now this word compassion, or if you like to use the commoner garden word love, is something which is the great unifying power, the unifying factor, the whole-making power, the whole-keeping power functioning throughout the universe. We human beings, at least as far as I know, are the greatest interferers with the life trends, the trends of life, of the universal life, as they function through all universal process. Now the life trend of a galaxy is different from the life trend of a solid or a liquid or a gas, of a plant or an animal or a human being. They're all different. And they have to be different for the very simple reason that the primordial creative energy is absolutely inexhaustible, where the variety of its manifestation from moment to moment throughout all existence, throughout the entire universe, is concerned. And this variety is there because the life trend, whilst you can talk in terms, in generalized terms, for a whole species, say the human species, the life trends for mankind, you can mention them as this, that, or the other, but in each individual, this, that, and the other will manifest in a unique way, in a marvelous way. If we do not interfere then with those life trends, but become increasingly sensitive to them without trying to know them in precise terms of thought, you see, then the uniqueness within the individual will flower out. That will be your true flowering, your own true flowering. You take a flower, an actual flower, a plant on a tree or whatever it is. Does that flower know that it has come to full flowering? It is quite unaware of it. It just is like that. And that's in the human kingdom, that's so wonderfully exemplified in a little child, 3 years old, 4 years old, full of the zest of life, not knowing the meaning of zest or of life. But it runs about, it shouts, it rolls on the grass and all the rest of it. And when it has a jolly good bellyache, it yells like anything, you see. Completely spontaneous, completely natural. The inner deeps of consciousness, however, in that child are still asleep. Now when we go through our trials and tribulations with adolescence and adulthood and all the appalling mistakes we make in life with our husbands and wives and children and friends, and all our ambitions and everything come in, the I has come in into the whole story. But if we are fortunate enough to allow that I, that separative I, to be completely dissolved, then in our maturity, our true maturity, when the psyche is utterly purified and the mature mind is functioning through the body, then we shall know, we shall have come to our true human fulfillment. The purpose of our existence will be fulfilled. And in that state, compassion will have an extraordinary meaning. It's impossible to describe it. Suffice it that we know now, we can see this with our own ordinary intellectual processes even, if we let the psyche be quiet and just be sensitive, observant in the way of being sensitive, increasingly sensitive all the time to what is actually happening. See? Then this comes to fruition like that. And through us, the forces that make for the true evolution of mankind function more and more freely and more easily, because we have ceased to be interferers with that process. This is a deep meaning of the word yoga. The unification, by allowing the essential unity which is there from through all eternity not to be obstructed. You don't have to try to be alive. You don't know what the life energy is, what the life force is. I don't anyway. But this organism, which I say is my organism, not unjustifiably, this organism is alive because of this mysterious life energy. here I am alive. And next moment, or perhaps to be, not to shock you too much, after you've left the room, I may just suddenly die. You see, one moment we say this man was alive, the next moment he's dead. There is a last breath and he's dead. And then of course the coroner or whoever it is who does all these things, they'll make some examination and so forth and pronounce a solemn judgment or such and such a thing. They give wonderful scientific names to the process. He died of this, that or the other. But the mystery of life still remains the complete mystery of life. One moment he was alive, the next moment he's dead. And that's that. So we don't know what it is. In the same way, this mystery, compassion, and the same applies to truth. He who is the embodied compassion is also the embodied truth, the embodied wisdom. He doesn't know in terms of mere brain knowledge, I am now wise. God does not deliver any certificates to anybody for anything. But the marvel takes place. And we have ceased to interfere with the life processes. We have fulfilled the purpose of our existence. Now, long before that climax comes, long before that, he who really is living the religious life is already a power spreading out that kind of influence. We all know from our personal experience how in the presence of so-and-so or so-and-so, we are quite different. The whole world seems different. And when we speak of it afterwards, we say, oh, he had such a wonderful atmosphere, or this, that, or the other, or such a remarkable influence, a peaceful influence, or an awakening influence, an energizing influence, or whatever it is. We say that of him. Practically all of you must have heard about Ramana Maharishi of India, who died about 1950, somewhere there he died, you see. That he spoke very little, and usually not at all. People went to him with all kinds of problems, and they would sit down and he would just look at them. Sometimes he might say a word or two, very often he didn't. And in his presence, the questions vanished often. Sometimes the questions were asked. And again, he might reply just by a look or by saying a few words. And that was quite enough. There was a transformation of the person who went to him. We, in our way, exercise the same sort of influence in lesser or greater measure. You see? And this is one of the remarkable things that happens with him who is a true religious. See, these are matters of deep import. We don't appreciate the depth of that import. We think that in our life we must do this and do the other and get on with this and get on with that, because there are so many problems and so many difficulties and so forth. Therefore, we just don't remain quiet and silent. I don't mean remain quiet and silent in the sense of just being lazy bones, inertia, an excuse for not shouldering our responsibilities. In fact, we would fulfill them better than the non-religious person, because we are fulfilling them in terms of an inner quiet and an inner silence. And often and often that inner silence will express itself in an outward silence and an outward quiet. That person, you will observe, is never self-obtrusive. He never obtrudes upon anybody or in any social group. He is free from all self-obtrusiveness and is free from imposing his views, and certainly free from useless, endless chatter. It's simply extraordinary. One comes across hundreds of really sincere, well-meaning people who, they say, are dedicated to the religious life. And oh, the chatter that flows out of them. Endless, useless, loud-mouthed chatter. That's the first lesson they have to learn, and they don't learn it. It's rather natural for the 20s to talk a lot, for the 30s also perhaps to talk a lot. But when it goes on into the 40s and the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, then for God's sake remember the words of Jesus. If thy tongue offend thee, I'll leave the rest to you. But oh no, we don't do that. We are perfectly prepared to pull out other people's tongues, not our own. So now, when this kind of fruition begins to take place, this kind of compassion, deep compassion arises. It takes no sides for the saint against the sinner. It takes no sides whatsoever. If it does, it is not true compassion. Then total commitment to the religious life becomes the fact. Now we are truly living religiously. Because in that state, we are in the state of unification in mind and consciousness with the total reality. That is our true fulfillment. So you see, you don't have to join this society or go to that monastery or up the Himalayas. It's very cold up there. You'll come down again anyway because you won't have enough to eat. You see? You don't have to perform all those antics of the pseudo-religious. Just be religious. Don't strive to acquire religiosity. This is very important. We don't understand these fundamental things because we are creatures of feeling, subject to being, to having our egos and vanity pampered and inflated or pricked and hurt. So watch the feelings. Watch the thought processes as they arise. And don't fight against them. Just observe intensely. And in the intensity of that observation, in the state of quiet and peace within ourselves, the transformation of that psychical energy takes place. And there's no conflict within the psyche. This is real yoga. And it is the kind of, or any religious discipline, and it is the kind of discipline which brings you to the supreme state of being the alone. Not meaning lonely, cut off from the rest of the universe, but the alone in its profoundest meaning, the one only. That means the totality. That is the one only, the totality, in mind and consciousness. And all your functioning in terms of action, speech, thought will be pure and wonderful.